You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, two of our WPR reporters spent time traveling with Wisconsin's U.S. Senator, Republican Ron Johnson, and his challenger, Democrat Russ Feingold. They'll share the latest in the run-up to Election Day.
First, despite several mass shootings in recent years, gun control isn't getting much debate at the local level this campaign season. Democrats often say they want stronger controls, but most Democratic contenders are saying little on the stump. An exception is in the Milwaukee suburbs, where a congressional candidate is making universal background checks a key issue. Chuck Kornbach reports.
Waukesha County is one of the most conservative areas of the state, but recently in the city of Waukesha, downtown, about 30 members of the progressive group Grassroots Waukesha held a sidewalk demonstration for gun control. Near the end, they gathered around Caree Pennybaker, who was holding a copy of his mother's death certificate from 37 years ago.
On this death certificate, you know what it doesn't say? It doesn't tell me what her favorite color is. It doesn't tell me that she loved me.
Pennybaker continued his list of dozens and then read,
"It just says, gunshot wound to the head."
Pennybaker's mother committed suicide with a firearm. He contends many suicides, homicides, and accidental shootings could be prevented if there was a national law requiring background checks for all gun sales, including sales between private sellers.
We want to be proactive in saving lives. We are doing this because we don't want other families to experience this.
Pennybaker says his Republican opponent, Representative James Sensenbrenner, has a defeatist attitude for refusing to press for universal background checks. Sensenbrenner, a 38-year incumbent, says background checks for private gun sales go too far.
And I don't think that is going to actually stop criminals from getting firearms and using them in the commission of crimes. Prosecuting those that already have violated the law by possessing a firearm is the way to go, because that way you get these people off the street.
So far, Sensenbrenner's point of view has won the day in Congress. Likewise, the Wisconsin legislature has done nothing in recent years in the way of limiting gun sales. In fact, with help from Democrats, the state now has a concealed carry law that may have led to more people with guns. Former Democratic state lawmaker Jim Holperin voted for concealed carry. Now a small business owner in Eagle River, Holperin says it's difficult for many Democrats to talk gun control during election campaigns if their constituents don't want to hear it.
I always voted the way I thought the voters in the 12th Senate or 34th Assembly District would have wanted me to vote. Overwhelming support for Second Amendment and for fewer gun regulations in northern Wisconsin, and that's the way I voted.
Still, over time, Holperin predicts there will be movement toward additional background checks. That can't happen fast enough for some people in the Sherman Park area of Milwaukee. Marcella DePeters tried to quiet her dog from barking as they were out for a late afternoon stroll last Thursday. Just 4 hours prior and a block away, Milwaukee police say a 19-year-old woman was injured by gunfire while sitting in a vehicle. DePeters says in recent years she's heard more gunfire in the neighborhood. She'd like Congress to okay more gun controls, like universal background checks.
I don't see any reason why politicians would oppose more background checks in a waiting period other than they're in the pocket of the NRA. I mean, that's the only explanation. It's just ridiculous.
The NRA, or National Rifle Association, has been trying to defeat Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, fearing she would take executive action on some gun restrictions, since many Democrats running for Congress aren't pushing the issue. An exception being Caree Pennybaker in his likely uphill battle against Jim Sensenbrenner in suburban Milwaukee. Chuck Kornbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
An incumbent member of Congress who's promoting additional gun laws campaigned in southeast Wisconsin today for Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. South Carolina Representative James Clyburn talked to WPR's Chuck Kornbach. Chuck joins us now with more on that. Chuck, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Well, you spoke with Representative Clyburn. What did he have to say on issues related to gun control?
Well, the main thing he wants to do is tighten a loophole in the federal waiting period requirement. Clyburn said this morning that he is not opposed to the right to bear arms, but that all parts of the Bill of Rights have limits.
The Second Amendment, to me, is sacred, but it doesn't mean that it's unfettered. And I really believe it's important for us to take common sense steps to keep guns out of the hands of demented people and the criminal element.
Oh, as you mentioned in your feature there, Chuck, a lot of Democrats are not leading with the issue of gun control. Representative Clyburn not shying away from it.
Right. Now, I want to make it clear that Clyburn did not talk about guns in remarks to a Get Out the Vote event in Milwaukee this morning. We sat down afterwards and spoke about gun control. His district includes part of the Charleston, South Carolina area, where 9 people were murdered in an African-American church last year. A jury selection was supposed to resume today in the case against the suspect, Dylan Roof. But apparently the judge in the case postponed the selection process this morning. But obviously the shootings are fresh in Clyburn's mind, and he believes many of his constituents want the tighter controls. He says he's got Hillary Clinton's backing on the issue.
And Clyburn's district also home this week to an issue linked to gun violence, the shooting of police officers and by officers of local residents. Can you talk about that?
Right. There's an ongoing case involving a white officer who shot, charged with murder of an African-American man, Walter Scott, as Scott fled a traffic stop in North Charleston in April of 2015. Clyburn backs a plan for more community-oriented policing to build better relationships between police and the community. Also says Hillary Clinton backs that and backs getting rid of mandatory minimum sentences and getting rid of for-profit prisons, which Clyburn says adds to a harsher climate in on the streets, so to speak. Now, Clyburn's comments today come on top of yesterday. Tim Kaine, vice presidential candidate, of course, talking at a Baptist church in Milwaukee. There he praised Maria Hamilton, mother of Dontre Hamilton. Dontre Hamilton shot by a white officer in Milwaukee in 2014. Kaine praised Maria Hamilton for her work with a group of mothers of children lost to gun violence, including officer-involved shootings. So quite a contrast, quite an outreach there, I should say, to some folks affected by gun violence.
And how about at the state legislative level? Are you seeing candidates? I think you had mentioned something earlier about Republican candidates and police shooting-related issues and support for police officers. What are you seeing on that?
Well, right. On Saturday, I attended a rally, Republican rally in Mukwonago. There were several comments made by Republican candidates on behalf of the Second Amendment, including Representative Sensenbrenner was there talking briefly about the Second Amendment, but also speaking in the sort of warm-up act, if you will, State Representative Samantha Kirkman of Kenosha County. She listed the number of police officers who've been killed in the line of duty in the last few weeks. She's also been a big backer of the We Back the Badge signs you may have seen on some in some yards this fall. It seemed to me more often you'd see those signs next to ones promoting Republican candidates than you would to Democrats. So it's an issue. We'll see how it plays tomorrow.
Bigger picture, Chuck, you've covered an election or two in the past. Have gun issues been more front and center in local and state elections in the past than we're seeing in 2016?
Well, I think there have been times, President Clinton's candidacy, Bill Clinton's candidacy, the Bush candidacies promoting Second Amendment. But this, of course, this year comes as after the spate of horrific shootings, South Carolina, the south side of Milwaukee, Oak Creek, other places in the last 5 years where there's just this large number of mass killings, sometimes blamed by conservatives on foreign terrorists, but often the case is where it's U.S.-born residents taking action against others in what some have called hate crimes.
Chuck, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was WPR reporter Chuck Kornbach. He is based in Milwaukee.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we hear from two WPR reporters who spent time traveling with the Johnson and Feingold Senate campaigns.
Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's executive producer Erica Janik.
Raised beadwork was once widely practiced by the Iroquois, but the art form had declined precipitously in the mid-20th century. But since the 1990s, Native artists have made a major effort to keep the tradition alive. I went to meet two Oneida artists at an exhibit of their work in Madison.
Becky Webster, Oneida, Wisconsin.
Loretta Webster, Oneida, Wisconsin. No relation.
Well, I was beading since I was probably a teenager, but just experimenting on my own. But I didn't really get into beading until I took a few classes with Loretta. and that was about 12 years ago or so. It was kind of like a beating circle, and Loretta would make her way around and say, you know, that looks great, or, ooh, maybe you shouldn't do that.
There's excellent, excellent beaters, and you can probably learn just about anything you want. You know, ask any question you want, and there'll be someone in the beating circle that can help you. Oh, I've been beating since I was about 20 years old, and I'm 77 now. But I learned to bead raised beadwork in the 90s, and I started teaching almost right away. I had a store, and I started giving classes almost immediately because people wanted me to show them how to do things. I have tried basket making. And I have three baskets half done, and I've done pottery. I've taken several Oneida pottery classes and never really finished any of that. And I've got a whole box of yarn to make a yarn belt. Never even started it because I always finish my raised beading. So I figure this is my calling. Don't try to mess around with anything else. This is it.
Well, the favorite thing that I'd made is just what I made this summer, where I combined a little bit of the traditional raised beadwork with the contemporary. I'm a big Star Trek fan. So I have the glass cabochons in here with the Star Trek symbols, but they're incorporated into different parts of the traditional beadwork. So like this design here is part of our creation story. It's the celestial tree. And then on the back, I have incorporated into the floral patterns, and center stage is hopefully the most recognizable of the Star Trek symbols, and just into a raised beadwork floral pattern. And this is one of my favorite pieces so far. I made my husband a pair of matching cuffs, but his has the Marvel characters on the inside. So, and also he has, my moccasins have the Star Trek symbol, and his moccasins are actually a Deadpool character from Marvel Comics. And what we do a lot of times is try to make our traditional shirts into clothing that you wear every day. So between the beadwork, like this collar that I have, you know, you can just, I had it on before with a pair of jeans and a regular shirt. So it's bringing it into everyday life too, not just at powwow time or at ceremonies and stuff.
I retired 2012, and in those 3 years, I have never been without a commission. You know, people who really want something done in raised beadwork, though. It keeps me busy, but I love it. I bead every day, whether I have a commission or not.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life on our website, wisconsinlife.org, and on Facebook. I'm Erica Janik.
This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. Join us tomorrow night at 6 for special election night coverage from On Point. As the country braces for first voting results in this historical presidential contest, we'll get reports from the polls and key battleground states and talk with Americans about their hopes and fears as the 2016 race reaches its climax. That's the On Point election night special tomorrow night at 6 here on the Ideas Network. And then join us when the polls close for returns as they come in. That's tomorrow night, election night, here on the Ideas Network.
Now, with the race for Wisconsin's U.S. Senate seat locked in a statistical dead heat, Republican Ron Johnson and Democrat Russ Feingold are crisscrossing the state, making their final pitches to voters. Wisconsin Public Radio spent a day on the road with both campaigns. We'll hear a report on Russ Feingold in a few minutes, but first, Laurel White has this story on Senator Ron Johnson.
It's about 9 a.m., and Senator Johnson just arrived at United Alloy, a steel fabrication company in Janesville. Johnson takes a short tour of the factory. Overall, this is a run-of-the-mill campaign stop. But today, Johnson has some reinforcements. U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan is with him on the tour.
Ron Johnson is one of those rare bright lights in the United States Senate who knows how to create jobs.
Wearing almost matching red sweaters and jeans, Ryan and Johnson look like teammates, and that might be intentional. Wisconsin Republicans are making a strong push in the final days of the senator's campaign. All the big names are getting together to unite and rally their Republican base. And all of them, Johnson included, are driving home the message that got him elected in 2010.
I've actually created jobs for middle-income Wisconsinites. I know how to grow a business. As a result, I know what we need to do to get our economy realizing its full potential.
After a short press conference, Johnson and Ryan jump back into their respective SUVs. They have places to be. The next stop is about 50 miles down the road in Maguanago. Governor Scott Walker and Republican vice presidential nominee Mike Pence are waiting for them there. In Maguanago, a long line of people are waiting to get into the rally. Tom Sisk, who lives in Maguanago, stands in line. He says he likes Johnson because he's down to earth.
He's a Wisconsin guy. He doesn't get drawn up in all the other outside interests that some of the other folks in the race do. They say they don't, but you look at the record. And that's the thing with Johnson. You look at his record, he's a businessman, he's created jobs, and he's actually run a business and done well for Wisconsin.
Susan Stone drove from Whitewater for the rally. She also appreciates Johnson's business background.
I think one of the main issues in this campaign should be to get our economy going, and I think he's done a lot for us as a state.
As supporters continue to arrive, Republican candidates and politicians file on stage to speak. They're standing in front of a big green tour bus that says Ron Johnson for Wisconsin on the side. First, it's Governor Walker.
And I'm spending all day today and tomorrow and Monday going around the state making sure that Ron Johnson is the next U.S. Senator from the state of Wisconsin.
Then Johnson takes the stage. Then Ryan. And last up, Mike Pence.
You know, I can honestly tell you that I was for Ron Johnson before it was cool. I met Ron Johnson before that last campaign, and I'll tell you what, I knew this was a guy that was going to go and shake up the status quo, just like another businessman that we're going to send to the White House.
After the speeches, Johnson, Ryan, and Walker load back up in their campaign caravan. They've got 150 miles to go. A stop in Green Bay, with everyone minus Governor Pence, is on the books. Johnson says he's traveled more than 150,000 miles around Wisconsin since he was elected. But he's got time in these final days to log a few more, with a little help from his friends. For Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Laurel White.
And I'm Sean Johnson, traveling with Russ Feingold's campaign. Feingold starts his day in Hudson, where he's introduced to a crowd of about 30 at the local Democratic Party office by former Minneapolis mayor and current Democratic National Committee Vice Chair R.T. Ryback.
No other Senate race is more important than this one.
When Feingold speaks, he hits populist tones that served him well in his first three U.S. Senate campaigns. Feingold suggests he's not done with campaign finance reform, one of his signature issues before he left the Senate.
If I win, I'm sworn in, I'm going to walk right across the room.
When you win.
If, yeah. Okay, you get to say that. I can't be the cocky guy. Yeah. Walk across the room and find maybe John McCain if he wins or whoever is there. I'm going to work on a bipartisan basis to make sure we get rid of this garbage in our political system. Right. I promise you that I will do that.
As soon as Feingold leaves, some volunteers grab phones and start making get-out-the-vote calls. Others grab clipboards and head out to knock on doors. St. Croix County Democratic Party Chair Rebecca Bonesteel runs through pointers with volunteers and gives them a pep talk.
Normally we hit our really good strong voters. What we're going to hit today are people that need a little push to get them out to the polls to vote. So what you guys are doing today could make all the difference in the world in this race.
Roy Schoberg of Hudson says he's working a nine-hour shift. He won't say he's nervous about Feingold's close race.
But I'll say I'm anxious, and I want to do everything I can to make sure that I don't wake up on Wednesday morning and say, oh, he lost by 20 votes. What I'm going to do today, walking around, I bet I'm going to scare up another 20 votes for Russ today.
At Feingold's next stop in Eau Claire, he greets a group of about a dozen college students outside a house where people are doing get-out-the-vote work in the basement. Feingold says he wants them to work like he's behind, but he also reassures them.
We are at the absolute moment where you guys should feel like you have victory here just within your grasp. You do, both at the presidential level and in our race, as well as many other races.
18-year-old UW Eau Claire student Anna Schmidt is voting for Feingold for the first time this year, but she knew about him growing up.
I remember my mother drove this Subaru when I was little, and she had a Russ Feingold sticker, and I asked her who he was, and she said, he is a very good man who does very good work.
Schmidt doesn't have much time to talk. She says she's volunteering 13 to 15 hours every day through Election Day to get out the vote for Democrats. From Eau Claire, Feingold visits the Portage County Democratic Party in Stevens Point.
Thank you so much.
As he has at every stop, he attacks Republican Senator Ron Johnson as out of touch on several issues, from the minimum wage to paid family leave.
You don't have a prayer with Ron Johnson on any of those issues. We know this. It's not like we're wondering how he'll vote.
Bill LeGrand of Stevens Point has been driving volunteers to canvass. He says it's critical that Feingold and Hillary Clinton both win.
I think it's imperative that we have a Senate, at least, or nothing will change, and it will be obstruction, gridlock, and nothing will get done.
LeGrand describes this campaign with a quote from the civil rights struggle.
You know, we're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and that's how we're feeling about this election.
Less than 20 minutes after Feingold arrives, he leaves for another city. He's off to thank more volunteers who are giving their time to help him. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up, we'll talk to a political reporter and a political scientist about how Wisconsinites are feeling the day before the presidential election, and we'll ask you to weigh in as well.
You can catch up on the latest in Wisconsin political news with the WPR Politics Podcast, available now. Join host John K. Wilson and Capitol reporting team Sean Johnson and Laurel White as they dive into the week's top stories. You can catch new episodes every Friday. You can subscribe or listen at WPR.org/politics.
And while you're at WPR.org, catch up on all of our candidate interviews and other topical news up until Election Day. Also, check out WisconsinVote.org for more election information and voting how-tos. There's more coming up on Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up tonight after 7, it's Reveal. In this week's edition, Reveal examines what happens when young people living and working with host families in America encounter long hours, low pay, cultural misunderstandings, and even occasional abuse. That's tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
First, it is the day before the election, and an analysis of the final pre-election Marquette Law School poll shows many Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton supporters here in Wisconsin have doubts about their candidate of choice. For example, 37% of Clinton voters would not describe her as honest, and 32% of Trump voters say he does not generally show good judgment.
Craig Gilbert and Mordecai Lee join us now to talk about what Wisconsin voters are saying and feeling the day before election. Craig Gilbert is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Mordecai Lee is a professor of urban development at UW-Milwaukee. Craig, welcome back.
Nice to be with you.
And Mordecai, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, start with you, Craig. You dug into the Marquette Law School poll results. What did poll respondents say about the main party candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump?
Well, you know, it's well known that they're the two most unpopular nominees in polling history. And when you look at the Wisconsin data, they both have pretty high negatives. Trump's are higher than Hillary Clinton's. What I was looking at in this particular piece was, you know, how many of their own voters have major qualms about them? When there's such negativity toward the candidates, it means that it's not enough for them just to get the votes of the people that like them, but they both are need to rely on the votes of people that don't like them in order to get anywhere near 50%. So you have, you know, more than a third of the Clinton voters saying that they would not describe her as an honest person. You have about a third of the Trump voters saying they would not describe him as typically having good judgment. You've got smaller percentages of Trump voters questioning his qualifications. You've got people who have negative views of both candidates, yet are still voting for them. That's new. I mean, in 4 years ago, when you looked at the polling, I think about 3% of all the voters on the eve of the election had a negative view of both candidates. It's six times that number this time around.
And Mordecai, put that into perspective for us. As someone who's had a long track record with Wisconsin politics, just how unpopular are these candidates?
Well, I think we as Wisconsinites make it almost like a state sport that we hate politicians. And when we go to a ball game and some VIP politician is introduced, we just boo them. We don't even know who they are, but we boo them. I mean, it's sort of that deep American tradition of not liking government and being anti-politician. But I'm going to make an argument that even though Craig is absolutely on the mark in terms of his analysis and Charles Franklin's polling is the best in the state, that those figures are, as of right now, obsolete. And this is pure speculation, but this weekend has really reminded me of 1980. President Carter was running for re-election. Ronald Reagan was his challenger. You know, this is before Ronald Reagan became Ronald Reagan. And up until the Friday before the election, it was a close competitive election. And then suddenly, sort of, it was as if all Americans had a secret conference call, and they all decided over the weekend to break in one direction rather than the other. And by the time Tuesday came along, Reagan just swamped Carter. And I'm going to speculate that the same thing happened this weekend. Perhaps it's related to the FBI announcement. I'm not sure. But I think that by the time we have the election results in just a little more than 24 hours from now, I think it's going to be a decisive election.
Four.
I'll leave that to the listeners.
Can you tell us about why you think this election is like that 1980 election? What makes you think that we're in the same sort of dynamics with voters?
Well, Craig is right when he talks about how unhappy people are. But I think that there are the soft unhappies and there are the hard unhappies. And the soft unhappies have always sort of been okay. Yeah, I'm going to vote for so-and-so. I think it was the hard unhappies who this weekend had to sort of face the truth and had to face the music. And then perhaps whether it was something that one of the candidates said during their campaigning over the weekend, perhaps it was the FBI announcement. But I think something cracked. And by the time they vote tomorrow, I think that's how they're going to want to vote, even if they're holding their nose.
Craig, I want to hear what you have to say about that. Mordecai is sensing, he says this is pure speculation up front about that, but do you sense any sort of wind change that people are going to break on Election Day in a particular direction?
No, but, you know, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's just, I think if you look at the polling, it's, you know, Clinton has had an advantage all along, and the race has sort of oscillated between, you know, her being 1 or 2 points ahead and her being 5 or 6 points ahead. So anything within that range would be consistent with kind of the pre-election polling. And it would also, you know, depending on the margin, could translate into a, you know, a significant electoral college victory. But that's going to depend on, you know, a handful of large states that could go either way, like North Carolina, Florida, and Ohio. I mean, they could go one way and keep this race very close, or they could go the other way and be kind of lead to more of an electoral college blowout. And that's, you know, that's kind of unpredictable. I think, you know, the one note about Wisconsin and sort of the popularity of these candidates that I would add is that, you know, these are both candidates that lost the primaries in Wisconsin, and this is going to be the first time since the 1960s that we'll have a president who didn't win the Wisconsin primary. And so I think a little extra burden in that sense on them in terms of appealing to voters here. But it's also worth pointing out that, you know, the state is projecting a turnout on the level of 08 and 12, which were very high turnouts. And so despite, you know, kind of the baggage that these candidates seem to have for voters, there's no evidence that yet, at least, that it's depressing turnout when you look at the record-setting early vote in Wisconsin. When you just look at the sort of signs of engagement on the part of voters, we could have, I mean, it would be very interesting to have a turnout on a level of 08 or 12 when the candidates have the kind of high negatives that both Trump and Clinton have.
We're talking right now with Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and political scientist Mordecai Lee talking about what Wisconsin voters are saying and feeling the day before the election. And Craig, we've been talking a lot of this race about the reluctance to support Trump in southeastern Wisconsin, usually a conservative stronghold. How is he performing there now? What is your sense of the latest in that area?
Well, I don't have any sense that, I mean, I think there is some coming home on the part of Republicans, but not all the way home. And so it's been striking to me how persistent this pattern has been, starting before the Wisconsin primary, when the polling showed very dramatically that Trump's worst ratings with Republicans were in the most Republican parts of the state, which is the area we're talking about. And then, you know, pretty persistently since then, we've seen him underperforming what a Republican should be getting in places like Waukesha County and Washington County and Ozaukee County and in the whole kind of southeastern Republican region of the state, not getting the margins a Republican really needs to get. That's been a consistent pattern, and I think it just reflects, both the demographics of the area, higher education, higher income. That's been a tougher demographic for Trump, and you tend to see more concerns about temperament among college-educated voters. And also, because it's a conservative area, concerns about, you know, whether he's a true conservative or not. It kind of works both ways in these counties, because on the one hand, ideologically, people, Trump hasn't really closed the sale with them, but on the other hand, they're pretty partisan Republicans, and so a lot of Republicans, you do talk to a lot of Republicans who have reservations about Trump, but they also feel like, you know, as good Republicans, they need to cast that vote, and they're also, you know, very so negative toward Hillary Clinton that they're really motivated by a desire to defeat her. So these voters are kind of conflicted, and they're being pulled in a couple of different directions, and a lot of the voters I've talked to are just sort of genuinely pained about the vote that they're casting, and I think some of them are going to end up casting a vote for Trump, but not all of them, and I think that will cost him.
Could I jump in?
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to give sort of the alternate scenario, and maybe this is science fiction, but another thing that happened after the last poll is that Donald Trump was going to have a rally in Wisconsin on Sunday. Now, he canceled it. He went to Minnesota instead. But the most significant thing, I think electrifying in terms of the GOP vote, is that Paul Ryan said that had the rally gone on, he would have gone to it. He would have appeared on the stage with Trump. He actually said the words Donald Trump. He encouraged people to vote for Donald Trump. I think that's sort of like a weather vane. That was a signal to the wow counties, to the very people that Craig is discussing, at the last minute, that everybody should come home and they should follow his lead. So I think the situation has really changed in the last 48 hours.
On the other hand, Mordecai, I mean, Donald Trump did cancel, and there's at least speculation on Twitter or suggestion that, you know, maybe Ryan knew that and was still keeping his distance, but kind of not looking like he was keeping his distance.
I mean, you could argue it either way. I think it's sort of disingenuous because he said Donald Trump. He said, "I would have been on the stage with him. I have already voted for him. I encourage people to vote for him." So I think the fact that it was canceled is probably more of a kind of a scheduling glitch. They in New York, they just weren't aware that here in Wisconsin, when there's a home game of the Packers, that we don't want to do anything else that day. Going to Minnesota meant that the media market up in northwest Wisconsin was covered by the rally. So I think we should take it at face value.
We're talking right now with Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and political scientist Mordecai Lee talking about what Wisconsin voters are saying and feeling the day before the election.
We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How are you feeling the day before the election? What do you think about the main party candidates? Are you happy with the candidate you're voting for? Seeing some polls showing a record number of people around the country not happy with the choice they're faced with compared to previous elections. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
There's more coming up here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're picking up our discussion now with Craig Gilbert of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and political scientist Mordecai Lee. We're talking now about how voters in Wisconsin are feeling the day before Election Day.
You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. We've heard from Craig a decent number of voters, according to polling, have serious reservations about the candidate they're actually going to vote for. Is that you? Are you voting with doubts, with an asterisk? Why do you think there's so many voters not 100% behind the candidate they're voting for? What are things like in your community? Excited for the election or excited for the election to be over? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll go to our callers now. We've got Jim with us in Rice Lake. Jim, hi.
Hi, thank you. I just want to contribute. I think Nate Silver's 538.com is the gold standard of survey analysis. He got not only the last two elections right, but he got every single state right the last two times. He gives Hillary Clinton about a 73% chance of winning Wisconsin and about a 70% chance of winning the election generally, with Florida and North Carolina being the ultimate tipping point states. I would not bet against Nate Silver. And finally, I would add that the reason why Trump is doing well is I would analogize that Hillary Clinton is to the Republicans what Richard Nixon used to be to the Democrats. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Jim, thanks for that. And Craig, let's go to you. How would you respond to Jim's assessment there of where we are?
Well, it seems to me that for all the talk about how disliked they are and how unpopular they are and people holding their noses, you've got to look at the number of people who cast early votes and you've got to say, wow. You know, I think it was about 800,000 votes, practically a third of the electorate. Based on that, that means the people wanted to vote. They were eager to vote. I think we should therefore predict that tomorrow is going to be a turnout that's going to be even higher than what the election board expects. We might even hit 80% turnout. I think it's going to be a Noah's flood of voters, just like we had in the April primary.
And Craig, you were getting at that earlier. Looks like that the numbers are up there, that this could be one of those big years for voting.
Yeah, I don't see it getting anywhere near 80%, but the highest turnout we've had really since at least 1960 is maybe 73% of voting age adults in Wisconsin, and that was in 2004, interesting enough. It wasn't one of the Obama elections. So the Elections Board is saying, you know, something like 69-70% of voting age adults, which would put it in the ballpark of 08 and 12, and that still would be very impressive. Again, turnout like that in a year when you know, when there have been so many complaints about both candidates is pretty impressive. And 3.1 million voters is a lot of voters. What will be really interesting, what more important is really, you know, whether there's any turnout differentials. I mean, what's the turnout among African Americans in Milwaukee? What's the turnout in the WOW counties that we've been talking about, the Republican turnout, which are incidentally basically the highest turnout counties in America. Ozaukee, Washington, and Waukesha are all top 10 counties basically in turnout. So that's a high bar to match in an election like this. It'll be really interesting. I'm going to be really interested to see whether they turn out at the levels they did in the Romney election. I mean, you had communities in Waukesha County that where 90% of the voting age citizens were voting in 2012. And so take a look and see if that happens again. If it does, it could be good for Trump, but it's also going to depend on whether he gets the kind of uniform support that Romney was getting from these Republican voters. I don't think it's going to be quite there. What's the turnout going to be in Dane County, which has become just an absolute juggernaut of Democratic votes in a way that has kind of altered the statewide calculus for Democrats and made this state just a lot harder for Republicans to win at the presidential level. So there's going to be a lot of interesting things to watch, both in Wisconsin and nationally, in terms of participation, in terms of whether white working class voters are turning out at higher rates and making up some of that turnout deficit with college voters, and how that affects the Trump and Clinton calculus.
All right, Jim, thank you for that call. And we're going to go next to Brooke joining us in Oshkosh. Brooke, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to share that I'm one of those independent voters and had selected everybody on the ticket for my district except the presidential candidate, and I disliked them both equally for the longest time and was thinking third party, but did pivot this weekend to make a choice of one of the two main candidates. And it was just a very unique situation because I've never been so undecided in my life for the presidential ticket.
And it sounds like you don't want to share, and we respect that, but can you give us, in a general sense, why did you pivot? What helped you make that decision?
I think it came down to fear of, and you'll be able to guess probably who I'm going to vote for, fear of the judgment of one of the candidates and what it means for international affairs and foreign affairs and the lack of I can't think of the word right now, but lack of a temperament that I think brings people together.
All right. Well, Brooke, thank you for that. And Brooke, she waited till the very end to make her decision. Mordecai, how many people do you think are going to wait until they get into the booth at their polling place to make that call?
Well, if there are a couple hundred thousand people like Brooke, then I think that'll be the decisive result that I sort of predicted about this weekend being important. I think what's very interesting about what Brooke said is that she was considering third-party candidates. And, you know, a month ago, 2 months ago, we were thinking that Gary Johnson might get up into the double digits. Stein didn't seem to quite catch on, but there are supporters for her as an alternative to the sort of Democratic Party. But for some reason this year, none of the third-party candidates have caught on, and they appear to not be a factor in terms of tilting a state towards one or the other.
What about Utah?
I don't know Utah politics. It is strange, but I'm going to predict that that third-party candidate is going to fade and might not go beyond the teens tomorrow.
Well, thank you so much for that call, Brooke. Appreciate that. And I think we got time for another call here from Ed in Madison. Ed, hi.
Hi. I just can't believe that people aren't talking more about Hillary Clinton's corruption. I mean, we're talking national security. We're talking... She has got more corruption than any other politician on the planet Earth, and I can't believe anybody with a reasonable sanity would even pick her. She's a danger to society.
And thanks a lot for that call. And Craig, for voters, let's say maybe we look again at southeastern Wisconsin, but who have dislike maybe of both candidates or questions about both candidates, do you think that those questions that Ed was raising about Hillary Clinton would be enough, you know, to tip some voters into the Trump camp?
Well, I mean, if you look at basically Republican voters are, you know, Hillary Clinton has like a 98% negative rating with Republican voters in Wisconsin. And so they're already there. The undecided Republican voters are not undecided because they don't know what to think about Hillary Clinton. They're undecided because they have reservations. The ones who are undecided have reservations about Donald Trump, and they're trying to decide whether they can vote for him, whether they want to, or whether they'll vote for a third-party candidate. And whether that would be, you know, whether they can live with that if it enables Hillary Clinton to win the election. So those are the kind of conversations you have with Republican and conservative voters. It's not, most of these people are not people that are really available to Hillary Clinton as voters.
You wrote about how you thought there might have been a stabilizing influence, though, in the high unfavorables of each candidate, because maybe if one was better liked, it might be easier for someone to flip the ticket they're voting for.
Yeah, I mean, we're really polarized along party lines, so it's hard for voters who have qualms about their own party's candidate to cross over to begin with to the other party, but especially when you look at how negative Republicans are toward Hillary Clinton and how negative Democrats are toward Donald Trump. I mean, the same thing with Donald Trump. I mean, there was a lot of talk earlier in this race about Donald Trump getting crossover Democratic votes, but it just hasn't happened, and certainly in Wisconsin and even in the national polling, it's hard to find places where he's getting more than very minimal support from self-described Democrats. So you don't get a lot of that kind of crossover. We are really polarized. And the polling actually has been pretty pretty consistent. You always get, you know, swings of 2 or 3 or 4 points in the margins. But we haven't had crazy volatile swings in this race, and it's partly because perceptions about these two candidates have been really consistent over time.
And just briefly, as we wrap up, Craig, what are you looking for early in the day and maybe in the evening to indicate what direction you think things might be going?
Well, you know, a lot of things. We'll be looking at the kind of geography of the race and where the vote's coming from and how, you know, whether, you know, we talked about the wow counties. Will, you know, is Trump going to win those counties by 35 points like a Republican should or not? I mean, what kind of margins is Hillary Clinton going to get out of Milwaukee and Madison? Is the turnout going to be on track to meet the projections of the State Elections Board? We'll be getting early exit poll, returns on sort of what the electorate looks like.
And we have to leave it there. Craig and Mordecai, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Great. Nice to be with you.
That's Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and political scientist Mordecai Lee. He's at UW-Milwaukee. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.